Tim Raines, who knows a thing or two about this, Rowdy Tellez might be the best base runner in the system.
I love these teams that cry poverty and they have like billionaires as their owners. It's like, why aren't you spending any money? What is wrong with these guys?
What was that noise?
That was, nah. No.
No?
Are you disgusted? And welcome to Artificial Turf Wars, episode number 46, where we're podcasting from a hot shower to simulate Grapefruit League conditions. So we have the spring. The spring has begun. So we're going to talk about all things Grapefruit League. We've got some word on Joe Biagini not necessarily being a startie.
We got good start.
Josh Donaldson actually holding a bat in his hands. We have a spring home run from a new acquisition. Some kind words about Rowdy Tellez. We have Josh's reflections on Matt Latos and Marcus Stroman. We have an interview with Stacy Gutsoulias from BP Bronx about the Yankees and what they might be doing this season. We have a whole bunch of questions from you. And I think we might even have a do-over to fit in there. We'll see how it goes. So, before we get started, Artificial Turf Wars now has a Patreon. So, thanks again for listening and joining us on the podcast. If you'd like to give us a vote of confidence and make a small investment in making the podcast bigger and better, you can head over to patreon.com now and search for Turf Pod. And that's where you can find out about all the new things we have planned with the help of our loyal listeners. We do appreciate it. And now, as we move into the podcast proper, I would like to start with the spring standings because these... I found these on CBS. Did you know they not only have it broken down by American League and National League standings, but they also have Cactus League versus Grapefruit League?
Really?
Like, in case you were worried that maybe your team was on top of the Cactus League, but or maybe second or third in the Cactus League, but how was it doing in the National League? You could check that. So stupid. The Jays, and I'm not saying that because the Jays are 1-4. This is not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that these are games played by nobodies after about the fifth or sixth inning. So the Yankees nobodies are some of the best in the business. They are 5-1 and lead the Grapefruit League. The Angels lead. Yes.
Those Yankees nobodies, according to the box score, Gary Sanchez managed to go 7-for-7 with 6 home runs and drive in 12 runs when the Yankees only scored 9. So, you know, that's not a nobody.
Is that the real box score? Is that how deeply they care about? Have you ever tried to watch the pitch?
Screwed up.
Have you ever tried to watch the pitch count on a spring training game if you're watching on at bat?
Well, that's because it's just a broken system. That just every pitch is the minimum.
Strike.
All strikeouts are 3-pitch. All walks are 4-pitch, and all hits are on the first pitch.
Amazing. So we're having fun. The Jays have got some players on the field. They've gotten warmed up. You know. Speaking of warmed up, of course, Joe Biagini, we were talking about how the Jays pretty much had to give him a crack as a starter because it just made so darn much sense?
Yeah, I guess we were saying that last time.
Apparently it doesn't make as much sense as we thought it did. The quote from John Gibbons, I believe Hazel May asked the question about stretching out Biagini, and his quote was, "We're not going to get carried away and stretch him out too far unless an injury occurs to one of the 5 guys," meaning his starters, of course, "and then we might look at him being that guy. Hopefully that doesn't happen." So basically he said, barring injury, Joe Biagini's not going to be any more than like a 2 or 3 inning reliever.
The funny thing about that comment, it's like, we're not going to get him stretched out too far unless an injury occurs. But don't you want to have him stretched out pretty far in case an injury occurs?
Yeah, you don't, like, okay, so he's not stretched out, the injury occurs, now what? Like, who takes next start?
Brett Oberholzer?
That was weird. Like, I don't know. This does seem to happen, not just the Blue Jays either, every spring, where there's some idea about changing something for someone, and then an actual, you know, coach or a manager comes along and goes, no, no, we can't change anything. It's got to stay the way it was because it was good the way it was. Like, okay.
It should be mentioned that about this time last year, John Gibbons was talking about, you know, how good Aaron Sanchez was in the pen for us last year.
Yeah. So I think basically we're just saying decisions are not final at this point, right?
No. I mean, yes, we are, but no, they're not.
Josh Donaldson took a bat, and he took it to a batting cage, and he swung it at actual moving baseballs, which is cool. But does that mean he's ahead of schedule, on schedule, behind schedule? Was there speculation about this?
I think it's basically that he's on schedule. I mean, the original diagnosis had him out 2 to 3 weeks. If he's just taking batting practice today, it's still probably going to be another week or so before he can even think about getting into a game. But, you know, considering it is his landing leg, it's nice that, I mean, I guess it wouldn't matter which one. Both legs are pretty important when you're hitting. No, but since he's able to get in there and get some swings, and it means he's on the mend. It's not one of those, it's like, where is he? We haven't seen him in 2 weeks. Oh, yeah, he's still on schedule, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you do wonder when there's no evidence of a player after a while. Or, you know, he's always somehow ends up in that B game, even if the B game's 3 hours on the road. You know, it's like, well, why is he not, you know, where people are, you know, can watch him on camera or something. So, yeah. Sorry, flashbacks to previous years. Almost to that, it's not a lie if we know the truth.
I was hoping it would come up again. We should find a way to get that on every podcast because I've said it before. It is the greatest quote in the history of sports.
It's Donald Trump would use that quote if he knew about it. Let me put it that way. It's right up his alley.
But he doesn't know the truth, so it doesn't work.
Oh, dear. We saw what Kendrys Morales can do. He can murder baseballs.
So this is pretty funny. In the home opener of spring training, Morales, batting in near the, you know, middle of the lineup, his first at bat, he hits a squibber off the bat and it hits the third base bag. It goes about as slow as you can and actually still reach the base. And it's like, oh, I really got a hold of that one. Got a single. And then his next at bat, he hit one. I swear, this thing must have gone 200 feet high. I mean, it was just crushed. And it went out. I mean, okay, 200 feet. I have no idea if it actually was that high. But you don't really see balls hit as high as he hit that one that leave the park.
Right. So it was an atypical home run angle, but it didn't matter. Because he just...
This is where we should be like queuing up the major league. Too high. Too high. Look at it's gone.
Oh, man. You want me to do all of this audio work all the time.
I just like making things hard for you, Greg.
Well, it's okay. Yeah. Hey, go find a clip afterwards. No, I'm not going to find it. And then the other guy who made a contribution was Rowdy Tellez in the sort of back-to-back prospect action we had in... Was it in the first inning? Was it the second game? Where Alfred and Tellez, one drove the other one in? Yeah.
I don't remember what inning actually was, but yeah, they went double-double.
I think it was right off the top. So, I mean, does it mean anything in the sense of he got a hit? No, that doesn't mean anything. Did the fact that John Gibbons noticed him mean something? I think that does sort of mean something.
Yeah, I mean, he also, in the game, I guess it was 2 days ago, I can't remember which one, you know, he took a 97-mile-an-hour fastball and lined it the other way for a double. So, and Gibbons has noticed, he said, quote, Tellez was really good. He's probably the closest guy knocking on the big league door. You just watch him move around. His defense has definitely gotten better when I watch him out there, but he can hit. There's something different about him. And then in the not quite expected department about Rowdy Tellez, from Tim Raines, who knows a thing or two about this, Rowdy Tellez might be the best base runner in the system.
He is, for those of you not familiar, I believe he is a first baseman.
And he's not a small guy.
Yeah, it's kind of tallish. Kind of.
And bigish.
Kind of wideish. But a good base runner is not necessarily a base stealer.
I actually saw him steal a base, though, which was kind of fun. Got a nice hand from the crowd.
Gets better.
Yeah. Anyway, just if he's getting good reads and knows when to go, I mean, if he's got that, that's pretty useful. I mean, Edwin Encarnacion was a great base runner. He just wasn't fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as opposed to, say, Jose Bautista, who is an idiot savant sort of base runner, where he takes these ridiculous risks, which are clearly the wrong decision. I think in some cases the defense is so astonished by that, that's what throws them off and means he escapes more than the percentage of jams which he should escape.
Yeah, he has some special ones. Or you can be Ezequiel Carrera and be the fastest guy ever and just not know how to do anything on the base pass.
Yeah, it's like it's more than just running straight forward, apparently. And nobody's really gone into the subtleties of that with Zeke.
I'm looking forward to the season when Zeke gets fewer stolen bases in a season than Rowdy Tellez.
It could be this year. You mm-hmm. literally don't know. Well, anyway, being noticed by your manager as having more skills than he expected and being talked about knocking on the door is super good for the player. It could be good for the organization. I mean, we've obviously got kind of a weird thing going on at first base right now with a bunch
of... Yeah, we actually have some questions about that, so we can get into that a bit more later, but...
Fair enough.
You're right. It's definitely good when the higher-ups think you're special.
Indeed. So, of course, at this point in the spring, this is all about getting looks, I guess, is what it comes right down to. So, the new acquisition we talked about last week was the last minute... Matt Latos, does he look any good?
Well, he wasn't throwing all that hard. He's 90, 91. I think he hit 92 two or three times. And he gave up a three-run bomb. I think it was a three-run bomb. I actually can't remember how. But he gave up a bomb. But, you know, his off-speed stuff, his splitter looked really good. And he was throwing strikes. And Gibbons thought he looked pretty good, too. And you know, if this early in the spring for a starting pitcher, you know, if you can get that even up another 1 or 2 miles an hour, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I obviously you kind of know what you've got in Latos to an extent. Like, you're not going to be surprised by him. That's why you signed him, is because there's sort of a floor for him there that if he goes below the floor, see you later. But if something plays up, hey, we're all for that playing up.
Yeah.
Do we think do you think at this point he's more likely to end up as a starter in Buffalo, or are they going to try and cram him into a somewhat crowded bullpen?
I think most of that is going to depend on what his opt-out situation is. We don't know. It hasn't been made public, but if he has an end of spring opt-out, if he's not in the big league club and he has a good spring, then the only way they're going to keep him is if they send him into the bullpen.
Right.
But so, if they can keep him, there's no reason not to keep him in the minors because this team doesn't have any starting depth.
Mm-hmm. Other than Joe Biagini, who apparently is no longer starting depth.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. The other guy who you saw in person was our boy Marcus Stroman. How are his height and his heart looking?
Well, they don't measure each other very well. But he looked awesome. Like, really good. He was throwing 94 miles an hour in his first start of spring training. A lot of breaking balls. I think he struck out three. I mean, you know, again, it's spring training. But he was, you know, it was like Starling Marte and Gregory Polanco were in the lineup. John Jason. I mean, they were real guys. And, you know, the pitchers are ahead of the hitters. But his stuff was sharp and his command was good. I mean, it's better than the opposite, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and we've seen a lot of that, you know, in previous spring trainings where a guy comes out and he just can't seem to you know, either find the plate or find his velocity, or he's all over the place in his delivery. So even if it just shows that he's, you know, he kept his focus and he's been working hard over the winter on that, then cool. That's what you want to hear.
Yeah, and given the way he ended last season, if he can pitch a whole season the way he pitched the last 3 months of last year, he's going to be really, really good.
Absolutely. You know, Marcus Stroman probably has the, you know, the most upside still. I know we use that word all the time, but we kind of have a pretty good idea of what Jay Happ and Marco Estrada are capable of, which is very good things. Don't get me wrong, but we don't expect them to take another great leap forward. Last year, Aaron Sanchez led the league in ERA. I don't know that you can expect
a
lot
more than
that.
The best.
It's kind of, that's where you want to be at. So, you know, the guy you're looking for that big jump from is Stroman, who, you know, was, I think he's largely still figuring out how to use the rather large number of pitches at his disposal effectively. And like you said, near the end of last season, he seemed to click into some things he could do to mm-hmm. get people out more consistently. Do we have any other, you know?
Yeah. Just one other guy I'd like to talk about who I saw. So Connor Green pitched an inning plus. I don't know if he actually got an out in the next inning. Gave up 5 runs.
Sounds good so far.
He was hitting 99 repeatedly and 100 a couple times. I mean, he got rocked. He's young. He's not ready. But you can see, I think I tweeted this, like, you can see why the organization's high on a guy like that. I mean, he's throwing 99, 100 in February.
Well, you know, he's not loose, so you can't expect.
That's true, yeah. What a schmuck. No, can't even throw 101? Jeez.
Technically,
according to this, to the radar gun, he threw 99 and 0.
Yet another spring training quirk, which really, it says a lot about the facilities available down in Florida. Was he in Lansing last year?
New Hampshire.
He was in New Hampshire last year. So, you know, he's close, but obviously, yeah, getting rocked, and I'm sure some secondary stuff is going to need to come around before he can launch himself into the big leagues. But it is a rare find to find a guy who can throw 100 miles an hour at any time, right?
Yeah, and at least, you know, with an arm like that, even if he never does become the potential number 2-3 starter that they think he could at least have a career as a good reliever.
Fallback plans. All right, so that's sort of our first round of going around Florida Auto Exchange Stadium thinking about people. So hopefully we'll have some good news, because we didn't have any attrition news this week, did we?
No.
Let's cross our fingers and we're gonna go with that for another week. We invited Stacy Gatsoulias on from BP Bronx to talk about some of the competition that's out there in the American League East, as we do at this time of year. So we're going to come back with some Yankees talk and her right after this. And we are pleased to be joined tonight for the first time by Stacy Gatsoulias from BP Bronx. Welcome to Artificial Turf Force, Stacy.
Thank you for having me.
It is the time of year when we start to invite the enemies on the podcast, because it's it's only fair that they get to, you know, express all of the great things about their team and why they're going to destroy the Blue Jays. And then when the interview's over, we laugh about that a little bit and we move on. But why don't we start actually going back 2016? There was a veteran team sort of for the Yankees, and then they kind of threw all that out and there was some retirement, and then all of a sudden all of these prospects come up. So how did that kind of shake down for them at the end of last season?
It was kind of amazing to see, you know, what Brian Cashman can do at the trade deadline when ownership doesn't have him handcuffed. So we saw him able to make a lot of interesting moves, you know, getting a bunch of prospects back for Beltran, Chapman, and Andrew Miller, and allowing these kids to, you know, some of the kids who were already in the system to come up and play for the last 2 months. And it was a lot of fun, especially because they started doing so, not that they did really well, but they weren't mathematically eliminated until September 29th, which no one would have expected. And it was just fun to watch some of these guys seemingly come out of nowhere and just do really well. And, you know, especially, you know, you had A-Rod have his send-off on a Friday night in the Bronx, and then the next day, Aaron Judge and Tyler Austin come up and they hit in their first at bats home runs back to back, and it was just like, whoa, you know. Like, wait a minute, maybe this would be a good thing. And it was just a lot of fun to watch that
as fans
unfold, you know,
as fans everywhere else around the league started crying.
It was just to see what Sanchez was doing alone was insane. The night of my birthday, which was August 26th, I was at a restaurant bar, and there was a group that you could tell meets every Friday night to get drunk, you know, after a long work week. And anytime Sanchez came up to bat, they just shut up and stared at the TV like, wow. And he was like 4 for 4 that night with, I think at least one home run. And it was just amazing to see that happen, for them to watch this kid, like, to be just completely speechless and be like, wow, check this out. So yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. I mean, even as a Blue Jays fan, seeing what Sanchez was doing was pretty cool, just because I'd never really seen that. I mean, he went off.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and I mean, I kind of feel bad because, you know, it's not like he's going to hit 60 home runs this season. I mean, I could see somewhere between 25 and 30 if something bad doesn't happen to him, like if he doesn't get injured or anything like that. I think he'll be a solid player for the Yankees.
Yeah. Now, because of, you know, Aaron Judge, although he struggled a little bit at the end, but, you know, mm-hmm. Gary Sanchez's success and the way the team, like you said, did not get eliminated until rather late, with an including embarrassing sweep of the Blue Jays in September. We won't talk about that anymore. How much do you think that affected their way that this offseason went? Everyone expected, I'm not sure what they expected, but instead they ended up signing Matt Holliday. They get Chris Carter for an incredibly cheap deal. They bring back Chapman. And Brett Gardner's still there. It seems like they're still going for it as opposed to continuing any sort of rebuild.
I think it's kind of a disguised rebuild. Like, they're kind of saying, oh yeah, we're going to go for it. But I mean, if they were really going to go for it, I think they would have done more than what they did. I mean, the moves they made were, like you said, I mean, they got Chris Carter basically for nothing. I mean, no one wanted him, and he almost went to Japan.
Which would have been nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it kind of makes me laugh because they're like, oh yeah, you know, we're still going to go for it, blah, blah. You know, the 2017 Yankees are not going to do much of, they're not going to be horrible, but they're not going to contend in any way unless something catastrophic happens to the Blue Jays, the Orioles, and the Red Sox ahead of them, and even the Rays. I mean, I can't see that sort of thing. They're just, I think this is kind of like a bridge to 2018. I think that's when they're going to, you know, when CeCe comes off the books, A-Rod actually comes off the books, and they have a lot of money freed up, you'll see them do something bigger.
So is this partially a timing question, but also partially a luxury tax question? Do you think that's a conscious part of this decision making? Because I've seen it in an article, you know, in this off season.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons, that whole luxury tax thing, because they're still kind of dingy about that. Like, for years they didn't care, and now they're like, oh, well, we got to start saving money. Whatever, you're the Yankees, just go out and spend money.
We've been saying that about our ownership for years.
Yeah, like, you know, like, I love these teams that cry poverty and they have like billionaires as their owners. It's like, why aren't you spending any money? What is wrong with these guys?
Yeah.
A question too big for this podcast. You may have just asked one.
I didn't know that was possible, Rick.
We tackle all the big questions.
That's what we do. All right, well, so moving forward to this year, it's like you had a few career years. I mean, Didi Gregorius sort of broke out, and then obviously we mentioned Gary Sanchez putting up a 60 home run pace. Do you think that the expectations of Yankees fans, obviously not yourself, I mean, you made it clear that you thought that they were not a very good team. Do you think that people are expecting this offense to be a juggernaut all of a sudden?
I don't think so. I mean, I would hope not. I really hope not. I mean, you do have that faction of Yankee fans who are just delusional and think, you know, every year they're going to contend, even when there's, I mean, you know, we have five guys fighting for the last two spots in the rotation. And even, you know, like CeCe, if he continues how he pitched last year, I mean, he rebounded a bit last year from previous years, and he did okay. Pineda is one of those guys who's an enigma. You don't know what you're going to get from him because he could be really good or really bad within two pitches of an at-bat. Tanaka's arm, you know, from what people think, is hanging on by a thread. So who knows? You know what I mean? So I don't understand how Yankee fans could even think, oh, yeah, we're going to contend, you know, or, you know, oh, we're going to be great. We're going to do this. I mean, like I said, I don't see them doing as bad as Pecota thinks they're going to do, because they're always predicting that the Yankees are going to be 500. And they always somehow eke out more games where they're more like 84, 85, 86. You know, like, it's funny, when the Yankees are bad, they're never actually bad, you know?
Yeah.
Like, in what year was it? 2012, how awful the Red Sox were, and then they came back and won the next year, and then they went back to not being so great. Like, the Yankees don't do that. Like, they kind of hover around where you think, ooh, maybe they might make the wild card, but then they don't. And, you know, like I said, I think they're just expecting to kind of be in it a little bit this year, but not too much, and then everything will happen next year. And I think most fans know that. I mean, I would hope so.
Well, I think, you know, turning to the other side, most people, you know, outside of the Yankees, see them as the evil empire. And I think that failure to ever be bad is part of that reason, because, you know, it's always something happens and it's like, oh, the Yankees are in it again, or the Yankees are good enough to be a real problem when you face them in September.
Right. You know,
well, I didn't mention it, but Josh appears to have mentioned it again. But the other part of being the evil empire is having some, you know, some real awful personalities associated with the team. And I thought that they got some really nice players like Didi Gregorius and Starlin Castro. You know, a lot of these people are hard to hate on. So then we got to this point in the offseason and the Yankees proved that they are still run by seemingly evil people. When they threw Dellin Betances under the bus, what was your reaction when Randy Levine came out and did that?
All right. Randy Levine, oh my God. He annoys me so much. And like, just the sight of his face makes me angry, because he's such a putz. Like, he just really is. And, you know, I mean, he's been with the team since like 99 or 2000. And, you know, for a while there, you didn't even know he existed because he didn't talk. And then, like, once Steinbrenner Sr. passed away, the big guy, all of a sudden, Randy Levine is like a big mouth, and just, I wish he would shut up. Like, I wish he would just stay in the front office, do his job, and not come out and say stupid things. I just was so angry. Like, I mean, I get it. Arbitration isn't a fun thing. And, you know, you basically are trying to trash the players. So the arbitrator's like, yeah, they don't really deserve $5 million. Okay, you get $3 million. But to come out afterwards and say what he said about Betances, a kid who grew up in New York, who was a Yankee fan growing up, and who's playing for the team that he's loved since a kid, since he was a kid, and you're going to come out and do that? Like, what was the point?
Well, that's kind of what I was wondering.
That was the most baffling thing about it. It just seemed vindictive.
Straight up.
Even though you won. I mean, it doesn't make sense to be vindictive about that.
Right.
And, I mean, obviously, the rational sect of the fan base, I'm sure, agrees exactly with what you said. But was there anybody who thought what Levine did there made sense?
Not that I know of. I mean, it was just so mean. Like, it was just mean-spirited that he did that to Betances. And I know some people were like, you know, because Betances had said stuff after he heard what Levine had said about him. Like, what, is he going to just sit there and not say anything?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, you want the kid to stick up for himself. I can call him a kid because I'm advanced-aged.
We're not young.
I just really can't stand him. And I can't stand... And it's actually pretty funny, too, because Levine came out with those comments exactly a year after Lon Trost said really stupid things about ticket holders. When the whole thing about ticket prices came out, and he was talking about how rich people didn't want to sit next to non-rich people in the fancy sections of the stadium. And I'm like, what is this date? Yankee executives, you know, being asses day? Like, who's going to say something next year? It's like ridiculous.
We have a segment on our podcast actually called A Do-Over, and both Randy Levine and La Trost have been guests on that segment.
Yeah,
they don't know it yet, but
yeah.
I mean, you know, I've been a Yankee fan since I could walk, and you know, it's just getting harder and harder for me to like, I mean, I like the players, but the front office and the ownership, just they do so many things, and especially the last couple of years, it's just I just wish we can get rid of them but not replace them with anyone worse than that, you know. Like, I'd be kind of afraid to see who would buy the Yankees and what they would do to them, but at the same time, it's just some of the stuff that they're doing, like the whole Aroldis Chapman thing. I mean, I could go on that. Yeah. I can go on a tangent on that for hours, but it just, so many things that they've done in the last two seasons have rubbed me the wrong way, and it's just making it hard for me to want to root for them.
Well, so now the question is going to be, what are you going to root for?
I know. I mean, I'll root for the kids to do well. You know, I want to see Greg Bird come back. You know, he had two home runs today. And, oh, yeah. One was like a dinker that just went over the fake pesky pole in Fort Myers, and then he hit another one over the fake green monster in Fort Myers, from what I heard, because neither it was split squad today and neither game was televised, so I was keeping track on Twitter. You know, and just to see the kids do well, it'd just be fun to watch that again. Like, I would almost prefer like a whole season of what we saw in August and September of last year. That would be fun.
And so on that note, aside from the fun aspect of it, mm-hmm. of all the guys on this team, who is the one that you most think is going to be a positive surprise?
Positive surprise. Let's see. Can I say who I'd want to be a positive surprise?
Sure, go for it.
I would like for Jacoby Ellsbury to be a positive surprise, because that contract is an albatross and it's just getting worse and worse. And I would like for him to have a positive season this year, just to quiet that down, at least for a season. And then, you know, he can go back to falling off a cliff. I would like to see Pineda kind of put things together. I could see maybe Gardner having a little bit of a bounce back from last year. Not that he was bad, it was just not up to his kind of performance. You know, because everyone else is, you know, Didi was great, like you said. I mean, you know, he hit, what, he hit 9 home runs the year before, and he hit 20 last year. Mm. It was, he really broke out in a big way, and I like him a lot. I mean, I liked him the first year he played, when he, you know, replaced Derek Jeter. You know, he plays defense better than Jeter ever did.
The hard truth's coming out from the Yankees rep here tonight.
Hey, you know, I'm one of those realistic Yankee fans, you know? But on the other hand, I feel like I can say that about Jeter, but if anyone else who roots for another team says something bad about him, I'll stick up for him. And who, I don't know, I think...
Well, that's a lot of guys.
Yeah, Headley. He had a really, oh my God, his April was just, his April pretty much made his season seem like it was really terrible, but he did improve after April. It was just, he was so bad in April. So I kind of hope that he gets off to a better start this season than he did last year, because that was just brutal. He was batting like 160 something for a while, and
extra base hits, etc.
I did a piece on Beyond the Box Score, and I think his OPS plus at one point was like 25. Oof, it was just really bad.
It's like Russell Martin.
Yes, it's really bad.
Proof that time waits for no man.
Yeah, I know, really.
Speaking of time, we are actually getting to the end of ours, so we will ask you to engage either your scientific abilities or your gut, depending on how you do these things, and to give us mm-hmm. a prediction, an expert prediction, on the Yankees' final record and their position in the division this year.
Okay. I'm going to say 84-78. And
that was
probably
the record in 2016, was it not?
I think so. And 2014, which I predicted on ESPN, and I was right. And I remember when I made the prediction in April, I had people leaving me nasty comments. Only 84 wins? I'm like, yeah. And then they finished with that exact record. So
never forget.
I kind of like that. I think they will finish, I'll say fourth.
Fourth. Wow. Yeah, all right.
I'll say fourth.
As we like to say around.
If I'm right, who knows?
We'll come back. We'll play this if you're right. Especially since the Yankees will have finished fourth, which will be just fine with us. Well, thank you very much for coming from BP Bronx and joining us. We can find you, Stacey, on Twitter, of course, at StaceGots, if I'm right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All the best of luck to the Yankees, except for that part where they can't win more games than the Blue Jays.
Well, best of luck to the Blue Jays. Same.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for stopping by tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Talk to you soon. Well, that was most excellent, and by that I mean that there was hardly any trashing of the Blue Jays that went on, and a ton of trashing of the Yankees. So that,
and it wasn't even from us.
No, well, I mean we chimed in.
Okay, not completely from us.
Okay, fair.
Oh, that was good. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we might have to have her back on, like you said, when the Yankees are in last. shall we move on?
Let's do it.
All right, we're going to go and we're going to get some questions like this.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
Lots of questions this podcast. People are really getting warmed up. This is like 2 weeks in a row. We've had this huge list.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like people are liking baseball again or something.
Nah.
What was that noise?
That was nah. No.
No.
No? Are you disgusted?
Let's just move on.
So the first question is from Egg Egg. I don't know if Egg Egg has asked a question before. At Egg EGH 8008, which is from last week almost, but maybe I missed it, but did no players or broadcasters wish Barry Davis a fond farewell? Ouch.
I don't think Egg missed it.
Now, to be fair, Barry, unbeknownst to me, announced that he was leaving some time ago, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So it would be, I mean, if you wanted to take this as positively as possible, as if you were, say, Mr. Davis's mother, you would assume that it would be kind of awkward to throw back to like 3 or 4 months ago just to say goodbye to someone who'd already been gone for a while. Right?
Isn't that long ago? But I think what Egg is saying here is that, like, even at the time of the announcement, nobody said anything.
Yeah, and I think we probably should leave it at that, right?
Yeah, I think it sort of stands. The question stands for itself.
Serge Ibaka. Wow.
New Raptors asking us some questions.
No, at Josh _ treats.
No, that's just Serge Ibaka's pseudonym. It's really the player. Trust me.
His handle. If every club stays healthy, how does the division end up?
So the caveat here, the stays healthy, I think this makes the Jays a better team because it's like, oh, hey, we're getting 600 plate appearances from Devin Travis and Steve Pierce.
Yeah.
If every team stays healthy, I think it's Boston and the Jays fighting 1-2. And then probably Tampa, because they're just always hurt. Tampa, Baltimore, and the Yankees are just in a fight. Like tied all in the like 82-83 win area.
I think if that is something, though. I think the division is much tighter if nobody gets hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as soon as injuries start to factor in, you can, you know, you start plugging people to fill in holes and stuff, and you really don't know what you're going to get from those replacements. And the tendency is to get nothing for some teams. And if you're the Yankees, you get Yankee magic for whatever reason.
Yeah.
For 3 weeks, someone hits on a 60 home run. Well, for what, 3 months, someone hits on a 60 home run pace. But anyway, I would think Boston still wins the division if everybody's healthy, though. I would.
Yeah, maybe even probably.
They're younger players. It's just so they have more up left in them, given their health, right?
True.
So we have Brian A at big_B_SR. I think he's not much of an off-season fan because as we get to real baseball, the questions start to reappear from Brian.
That's true.
Who will play more innings at second base this year? A, Devin Travis. B, Darwin Barney. Or C, another bunch of scrubs. I have a dumb question about B. Did we sign him?
Wow, Greg. That'll be informed. Yes, he was signed for $2.88 million, avoiding arbitration.
See? This is why I ask you. You know these things. So who gets more innings?
Travis.
Just straight more innings? Yes, I would say Travis. Given everything that's happened in the first 2 years, I would be hesitant to say Travis will get like 2/3 of the innings.
Yeah. If this was A, Travis, or B, Darwin Barney, and another bunch of scrubs, I might have taken B.
Take the field.
pretty much.
Prove us wrong.
The field,
Devin,
is the one that's going to hurt Travis, so.
Yeah. All right. Since I'm reading all the questions for some reason this week, I'm going to continue to do so. Seagull at CNE Seagull. Who represents the Blue Jays in the All-Star game this year? I like this question.
Ooh.
Because
I'm going to go with.
Yeah.
Josh Donaldson.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be Jose Bautista in a bounce back. And Aaron Sanchez, just the three.
I think Josh Donaldson. I think Roberto Osuna.
Mm.
What, a little grumble.
No, that was interesting. Okay.
And I think in a strange twist of fate, Russell Martin. And then I'm going to go way out on a limb. I'm going to say Troy Tulowitzki gets added. Not obviously not voted in, but gets added late because of some other shortstop who was injured. That's
all right. I like
there
it.
There we are. Brendan Kuhn. Hello again, Brendan. BK, rank the rotation in order of 2017 ERA. I'd like to say before you answer that this would have been a lot easier question to answer if he'd asked us to rank it in 2016 ERA.
That's true. You could get that flawlessly. All right. I'm going to go with Sanchez, Stroman, Estrada, Hap, Liriano.
I'm gonna go. This is tough. I'm gonna go Estrada, Sanchez, Stroman, Liriano, and Hap.
Now the fact that we were so different just shows how strong this rotation is.
It has proven itself to be a formidable rotation, which is like the first. It has been so long since I can remember not desperately hoping for a miracle from the fifth starter from the Blue Jays.
Yeah. No, I can't even think of a time when I guess entering 2013, maybe.
That was, yeah, because it's Halladay, Johnson.
Halladay?
Not Halladay. Dickey. Dickey Johnson. Who were the other
Dickey
three
Johnson,
at that point?
Morrow, Burley, and Hap.
Yeah. Well, but at that point, Hap was like, who's this guy? What's he going to do?
Yeah, he wasn't this Hap, that's for sure. But anyway, good rotation.
Indeed. From CNE Seagull again, quickly, given no restrictions or assumptions, what job do you want Roy Halladay to hold with the Blue Jays?
Well,
he's special assistant working for the Philadelphia Phillies.
No, but it says no restrictions or assumptions.
Oh, okay.
So, that means he can work for the Blue Jays and the Phillies. So I want him to be the president of making the Blue Jays better than the Phillies. I can make up titles.
I think roving pitching instructor would be really cool. Like Tim Raines' job. Thing.
Okay.
Well,
we talked about this on the last podcast or a few podcasts ago. It's like, just go down and teach Connor Green a curveball.
Yeah. That's the actual job. The Roy Halladay, yeah. Go teach Connor Green a curveball. It's on a little plaque on the door.
It's his business card. Connor Green curveball coach. Connor curveball coach.
At the very last.
If you get another Connor, he can teach him that too.
Final question. Unless the question has come in. No, okay. A question has come in while we were questioning questions. Down at the other end of the list. Sorry. Second last question. Buff Tenderson at Buff Tenderson. First base. Raw rowdy or settle for smoke? Which sucks more?
Oh,
that's a pessimistic view, isn't it?
It is. I guess you want me to answer this, huh?
I don't know.
I think that the answer is probably Tellez. It would be the worst option right now. I mean, he hasn't even played above double A yet. So I think Smoke would probably still outperform him, but I don't know. I think both of them could be okay.
Yeah, I mean, 2015 Justin Smoke says that there is something there in Justin Smoke. Unfortunately, 2016 Justin Smoke says it's all trending in the sort of the wrong direction.
Yeah. I mean, 2015 Justin Smoke is still not a good first baseman, but he's not a horrible one. But I think he could be somewhere in the middle of those 2 years, and I think that's probably more than Tellez could do right now.
Yes, because Tellez is just, like you said here in the question, raw.
Yeah.
All right. Final question from Joel Wendell, at Wendell Joel. Which non-Jays team or player are you most excited to watch this year?
You can go first this time.
I'm kind of, my answer is always Mike Trout. That's not very original, is it? But then there's the Giancarlo Stanton answer. Okay, if healthy, Giancarlo Stanton. If he gets hurt like he usually does, Mike Trout.
See, I'm not ever excited to watch Mike Trout.
You're afraid.
Well, that could be the case. Yeah, no, for me, I'm really interested to see Ian Desmond as the first baseman. No, I'm just kidding. I want to see Steven Strasburg have a healthy season because I love that crazy pitching stuff. As you know, I'm a little biased when it comes to positions. But I don't know. I'm just waiting for him to have that monster season. And I don't know. For some reason, I think it's going to be this year.
We shall see. Shall we not? So I think we're always wishing for good health, aren't we? Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't even see the bad guys, quote unquote, get hurt because it's no fun. It's just
you just want them to be bad.
Yeah, or well, not at the critical time you want them to fail. That's really have all exactly. The success you want in garbage time, gentlemen. Go nuts. When it comes right down to it, do a Roofnet Odor and
its name is not Roofnet. There's no F. You do that every time.
I know I do. I told you, I screw up players' names. It's my unfortunate thing. All right. Those are all the questions, right? I did That's find it. The last question. Awesome. And it comes time where we should do the do-over.
Oops, I said the quiet part loud and the loud part quiet.
But what if you could do it all over again?
But what I really meant was...
All right, take us to social media.
So we get most of our dwarves, isn't it?
Yeah, so, pretty much.
Emma Baxillary, who writes for Baseball Prospectus and Deadspin and a bunch of other places, that seems to be the case. She tweeted out, MLB has Instagrammed Tim Tebow more in the past 24 hours than they have Mike Trout in the past 3 weeks. MLB somehow saw this and replied, did you see this yesterday? And put it in Instagram of Mike Trout that they'd posted before. What is MLB doing?
Yeah, I don't know. What are they doing? Like, are they name searching themselves?
Yeah. They weren't tagged. It's like, ease up, you know? So, I saw this when Craig Goldstein posted it. And he's like, MLB getting defensive.
Unnecessarily defensive.
Like, yeah.
And then, as he pointed out, it doesn't really address the original claim, which is they do a whole lot of Tim Tebow stuff, and they don't actually promote a real player, because as much as we'd all like to pretend Tebow's going to play baseball, he's not. No one is going to let him take a major league field. So yeah, they're legitimately promoting a sideshow and not the real product, which is one of the greatest baseball players of all time who's in his prime. And I can actually say that with, that's not hyperbole.
No, it's really not. He is an outlier.
They don't seem to care. I don't. Yeah. Like, guys, just leave it. Leave it alone. That's the do-over. Leave it alone. Somebody wants to be critical.
That's pretty much the answer. Yeah,
you're Instagramming, just let him be critical. It's fine. Should be like a gong I sound or something on the do-over.
We can add that to the drop.
There you go.
So that's how we should end that.
A big gong. I think I tried that. It's not. It's so tough to come up with a gong in the right key. Let's go to a final thought before this goes completely
off the rails.
Sound editing instead of anything else.
Oh,
you got a final thought?
Yeah, it's nice to see some of these other guys down spring training that's fighting for these jobs. TJ House, he actually looked pretty good as a potential second lefty in the pen, a guy who can maybe go an inning or two if you need that. He was throwing 92, 91, but he was, you know, getting a lot of swings and misses, getting throwing strikes. And Tim Meza pumping 94 from the left side. I think these are a couple of names we could be seeing a bit more as spring progresses for that second lefty spot, if there is one.
Interesting. Would you like my final thought?
Yes, please.
You know, we mocked the new red uniforms at great length when we had an opportunity to do so a few weeks ago. I would just like to register a complaint about the spring uniforms. Probably several complaints. I'm not a fan of uniform changes for uniform's sake. This spring's uniforms, is this the second year for the blue leaf hat?
Yes.
Okay. That needs to be changed, because there is literally no precedent for blue maple leaves anywhere. And from, 50 feet away, can you even tell there's a leaf on the hat? But that's not the real offense of these uniforms.
Numbers, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the freaking numbers. First of all, they're solid. And they appear to be the same width as the split letter numbers, which looks fat and silly and bad. And I think I caught it today that there's actually something written on the white. Is that right?
Like, it's not writing. It's all these spring logos.
So it's crap, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, let's keep the crap off of the uniform. Nobody ever, 20 years later, went, wow, I am so glad they layered tone-on-tone logos over top of this thing I'm wearing. Nobody ever did that. So let's set ourselves up for any kind of uniform that might endure. That's so bad. So I'm sure they'll change it again next year. So I'll either be slightly less complaining or slightly more complaining about that.
Okay.
Yeah. That's kind of a down note to end on. We want to bring back something. We want to bring back Stump the Josh. So if you have a trivia question. You can DM me at coolhead2010, because Josh doesn't have the password to that, and he's got the password to every other social media account we have over at BP Toronto. And you can try and stump Josh. And if that doesn't work, well, we'll discuss format changes going forward. But for now, stump the Josh is give Josh a Blue Jays related question or about a Blue Jays player you think he can't answer, and I promise I won't give it to him ahead of time, and we'll see if he can come up with it off the top of his head. He may surprise you if you've never heard the game before. We also, as I remind you, have a Patreon at patreon.com/turfpod. Please pop on over if you're in a generous mood or you see a little bit of value in what we do here. We would love your help to make this a better podcast. And on that note, I have been Greg Wisniewski at, as I said, Coolhead2010. You have been Josh Housam at Joshua Housam. Our guest was Stacey Gotsoulias at Stace Gots, whom we thank for dropping by. And this was Artificial Turf Wars, episode number 46. And we will be back with you next week.